Chapter 8. "Thanks for listening, man," Roiland said, shaking Cooper's hand.
"Listen up, Roiland," Cooper said. "You've been acting like somebody's following you or something. Just a feeling I got. Anytime anything on your mind, you can tell me about it, okay? It won't go no further. You hear me? I'll help any way I can. I kind of know where you're coming from. My house ain't exactly paradise either." Roiland nodded. He remembered from middle school how Cooper sometimes came to school with bruises. At the time, everyone at school talked about Cooper's abusive stepfather. Roiland figured that kids talked about his dad in the same way. But that was years ago, and Cooper seemed clever enough to avoid much of that now. He was so good-natured that he could take a bad situation and make it bearable. Once Roiland heard Tara say of Cooper, "That boy can take the sourest mess of lemons and come up with the sweetest lemonade." But Roiland was not like Cooper. Roiland's nature ran to bitter, like his father's. It seemed to Roiland that the cards were stacked against him, that there was something about him that was unlovable. As a small boy, Roiland figured that that was why his father beat him all the time, because he, Roiland Bailey, was worthless. All morning, Roiland thought about Cooper's words, marveling about them over and over again. "Anytime, anything on your mind, you can tell me about it, okay?" Amazingly, Cooper was offering friendship. Roiland shook his head. "The only friend I ever had was Mr. Miller. And look what happened to him," Roiland thought sadly. "Cooper better stay away from me." At lunchtime, Roiland went to meet Corey. She came out of the classroom with Steve.
"Oh, Roiland," she called, seeing him. "I can't go to lunch with you today. I'm showing Steve what I have to do on that paper so he can get started."
Steve winked at Roiland behind Corey's back. His wink said, "You're out of the picture, man. You're history, Roiland. Sit back and watch as I walk away with your girl." Roiland did not say a word. He didn't have the heart to go into the cafeteria for a hot meal, so he bought a stale sandwich from one of the snack machines. Then he went outside, hoping some fresh air would calm him down. But he looked down at the sandwich, then smashed it against the bark of a tree. Blood streamed over his knuckles, but he felt no pain from his bruised hand. The pain inside him was so great that he could not feel anything else. On Saturday afternoon, as Roiland was leaving to meet Corey, Tuttle confronted him.
"Got a lot of pain to do, boy," Tuttle said. "Gotta be done this weekend, so the front of this dump looks good. Owner's coming by to look things over."
"I don't paint," Roiland snarled.
Tuttle cackled and then said softly,
"I finished the hole. Wanna see before I put him in?"
Roiland groaned in horror. An image of Mr. Miller's crumpled body lying on the floor of Tuttle's basement flashed in his mind. He felt a sickening feeling in his stomach, and his body trembled. Tuttle crept closer.
"Are you forgetting our arrangement, boy?" Tuttle sneered. "I got the evidence to put you behind bars for the rest of your natural life. Remember?"
The words were too much for Roiland. He cowered away from Tuttle and raised his hands to his ears in an attempt to block the sound of Tuttle's voice, just as he did years earlier to escape the noise of his father screaming at his mother.
"Now you're going to do some painting, and it's going to be done before tomorrow night. You got that?"
Tuttle growled, making sure Roiland would hear him, even with his hands over his ears. Waves of fear and hatred washed over Roiland.
"I can't do it now. I'll do it later on today," he whispered.
"That's fine with me, but if it don't get done..."
Tuttle pressed his own hands together as if they were handcuffed.
Click, click.
Then he chuckled again, turning his old Dodger's cap around and walked off. Roiland went to his Honda and took off. Corey had promised he could pick her up and they would do something together. Maybe they would go to the beach and then grab some burgers. Roiland was really looking forward to it. Thinking about it was all that kept him from going crazy. Roiland pulled up in front of the apartment where Corey lived and hit the horn. This is what Corey told him to do. Corey did not want to introduce him to her parents, she said, because they did not want her to date until she was 17. Corey did not appear, so Roiland hit the horn again. Still, she did not come. Roiland got out of the car and went to her apartment, finally ringing the bell at 3B. A very attractive woman answered. She said she was Corey's mother, and Corey was not at home. She went to a girlfriend's house to work on a school project, the woman said, her eyes narrowing. Who are you anyway? Just a guy from her class. I was going to work on the project, too. Do you know what house she's at? Roiland asked. Corey's mother checked a pad near the phone. She said she would be going to study with Brisana Meeks. Do you know where she lives? Yeah, I do. Thanks, Roiland said, hurrying away. Roiland had never been to Brisana's house. It was in a much better neighborhood at the edge of the area served by Bluford High. Most Bluford students lived in old houses or in apartment projects built by the government. But a new housing development had been built featuring nice condos. Brisana lived in one of the newest units, and her house had a small front yard with a few flowering bushes. As Roiland pulled up to the house, his mind was spinning again. Maybe Corey wanted him to meet her here, so her mother would not see him. But then why didn't she tell him that? Brisana came to the door. She looked Roiland up and down with a clear distaste, as someone might look at a nasty bug on the wall. What are you doing here? She asked coldly. I think my girlfriend is over here studying, Roiland stammered. You know Corey Archer? Your girlfriend, Brisana said, smiling at Roiland as if he were a 3-year-old kid who still believed in Santa Claus. Would you just tell her I'm here so we can go? She's not here, Brisana replied. Yes, she is, Roiland argued. Her mother says she was studying with you. Roiland tried to look past Brisana into the condo. Corey! I'm here. Roiland, you are pathetic, Brisana said. Don't you understand that Corey told her mom she was studying here so she and Steve could go out? I mean, Corey's mom has no clue what Corey does. All she cares about is keeping Corey in the house. Anyway, Steve came and picked her up an hour ago. Roiland turned cold. He felt as if he was standing in ice water up to his neck. Why are you lying to me? He gasped. Corey said we were going out this afternoon. Brisana tossed her head impatiently. Don't be stupid, Roiland. Just go home. Corey is my girl. She promised me we were going out together. She said she loved me. She said I was the greatest guy in the whole world, Roiland babbled. He knew he was making a complete fool of himself, but he could not help it. Roiland, just leave, okay? There isn't anything between you and Corey. There never was. Corey's with Steve. I don't know why you even thought you had a chance with her anyway, Brisana said. Roiland turned and ran back to his car. He did not completely believe Brisana's story. How could Corey be doing something so cruel to him? The only way he would know the truth would be to find Corey and Steve together. He decided to drive through the neighborhood, searching for Steve's black Cavalier. Roiland sped away from Brisana's and cruised past the hamburger and pizza joints for an hour, but he saw nothing. It was getting late, and he had to go home and do Tuttle's painting for him. Roiland was doing almost all the old devil's work now and getting nothing for it. Desperation and hatred grew in Roiland's soul like wildfire. He wished Tuttle were dead. He wished he were dead himself. Roiland was painting the front of the apartment building when Amberlynn came by. How come you're doing all Tuttle's work now? She asked. I'm picking up extra money, Roiland lied. Seems like you're working all the time. You must be getting rich, Amberlynn said. Get lost, Roiland snapped. But Amberlynn lingered. What's the matter with you, Roiland? You always had your bad moods, but sometimes you weren't so bad. Now you're mean all the time. You in trouble or something? Girl, I told you to get lost, Roiland said. Roiland, everybody in the apartment is talking about how weird it was that Mr. Miller moved out so fast without even saying goodbye. Did he say goodbye to you? You were his friend, weren't you? Don't you ever shut up, Roiland snarled, slapping the paint on the boards and splashing himself. But you were Mr. Miller's friend. How come you didn't say he was moving? I wasn't his friend. Perspiration began to run down Roiland's body. I mean, not for a long time. You watched the Super Bowl with him last year, Amberlynn recalled. I did not. You're dreaming, Roiland insisted. You did. You even brought a big tin of popcorn just for the two of you. You seem to like him a lot. Did you get his new address?
Girl, mind your own business. Don't you have something better to do than bug me? Can't you see I'm busy? Roiland cried. Amberlynn refused to go away. Seems like you should write him a note or something. You acting like he's dead. Know what Mrs. Adams at the end of the hall said? She said he didn't move out at all. Maybe old Tuttle killed him. Ever since Mr. Miller went away, we've heard this weird sound from the basement like Tuttle is digging a grave or something. That's what Mrs. Adams says. Terror struck Roiland. If talk like that spread, the police would come. There would be an investigation. It would take Tuttle about 2 seconds to turn Roiland in. Tuttle would be in trouble, too, for covering up what happened. But he would find a way to side with the law and be a witness against Roiland. Guys like Tuttle always landed on their feet. Roiland would be heading for state prison for murder. Being 16 did not count for much anymore. In murder cases now, you were tried as an adult, and you ended up in adult prison. Listen, Mr. Miller went back east to stay with his daughter, okay? She came and picked him up, okay? That's all there is to it, so you just go tell that nosy old lady to forget about it, Roiland said. It just seems so sad to pass by his apartment and know he's not there anymore. I mean, he's had that place all my life. Mama said that if she'd known he was going, she would have said goodbye, too. She said that once when Daddy was hurting her real bad, she ran to Mr. Miller's apartment and he took her in. Did you know that, Roiland? Mama said he was such a fine man. Finally, then, Amberlynn walked away. Roiland finished painting, cleaned up, and headed for his job at the Golden Grill. He was exhausted, but he had to go to work. If he did not show up for work on a busy Saturday night, he would get fired. All evening, customers poured in, and Roiland was glad of it. It helped him forget about Mr. Miller's death and what Corey had done to him. Finally, at midnight, Roiland took off his uniform and headed for the Honda. All he wanted to do was flop into bed and sleep. But as he drove through the darkness towards home, he spotted Steve Morris's Cavalier parking near a small Chinese restaurant in the neighborhood. Roiland's blood began to boil. Was it possible that Corey and Steve had been together all day and now were having a romantic dinner? At this hour? Roiland pulled into the parking lot some distance from the Cavalier. All the weirdness he had felt earlier vanished as rage pumped him full of adrenaline. He waited, his eyes on the restaurant's red door. Finally it opened, and Corey and Steve came out together, their arms loosely linked. Corey was laughing, and they came together for a brief kiss, then they strolled towards the car. When the pair reached the Cavalier, Roiland got out of his car and walked towards Corey and Steve. Hi, Corey. I see you wearing that pretty necklace I gave you. It looks real nice, Corey.
Roiland,
Corey stammered, fear on her face.
What are you doing here?
Remember we had a date this afternoon. We were going to the beach and then out to eat, remember? Roiland said bitterly.
Oh!
Corey tried desperately to look surprised.
I completely forgot. See, Steve and I were working so hard at the library all day on that history paper, and now we just stopped to get something to eat. I'm so sorry, Roiland.
Liar, Roiland snarled. Rotten little liar. Watch your mouth, man, Steve said sharply.
I paid $300 for that necklace for your birthday, and you said you were going to be my girl, and now you stab me in the back?
Roiland screamed. Roiland, go home, Steve said. You're drunk or crazy. Roiland glared with wild hatred at the big, handsome running back of the Bluford Buccaneers. Steve was the kind of guy who always won everything. Roiland always lost out to guys like him. Steve was smarter and better looking. Nothing ever went wrong in his life, Roiland figured. But for a little while, Roiland had been a winner. Sure, it cost him the life of his only friend he ever had. It cost him his peace of mind, and it put him in the clutches of Tuttle. But for a little while, Roiland was dating the most beautiful girl at Bluford High. He had stopped looking with envy at others, at guys like Steve. For once, they were casting envious eyes at him, but now that too was gone. The fantasy was over. The natural law was back in place. The Steve Morrises of the world were on top again, and Roiland was back where he belonged, at the bottom. Roiland's fists tightened, and he lunged at Steve.
I'll kill you! He yelled. Roiland, no!
Corey cried.